Today's broadcast includes affiliate promotions with our partners like Tona and Distill Union, to name a few. When you use our promo code FSEN, we may earn a small commission. This helps us to keep bringing you awesome sports coverage.
All right, everyone, welcome to FSEN Daily. We didn't get to connect on everything, but we're connected, and that's all that matters. Today, typically we do either a game show or we do a Entrepreneurial Wednesday, which is really recorded. Today we're going to do something different. We're going to go live, and I wanted to go live because we got a special guest in the house, Mr. Michael Parker. A lot of you have probably know him from being the voice of Kenya Till basketball, one half of the voice of Kenya Till basketball. He's joining us today, and the reason why is because if you see up in the picture, a man's wrote a book. You've heard me talk about it a little bit, and you've seen the advertisement on the platform. But my man's wrote a book, and I wanted to bring him on and let him talk about his motivation behind it, what drove it, and kind of talk about the book some. And yeah, so without further ado, Mr. Michael Parker, welcome to FSEN Daily, and thank you for joining us.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you for having me.
You got to get a little closer.
It's a pleasure to be here and get a chance to talk about the book as well as, you know, just life in general.
Yeah, so let's just jump right into it, man. A book. What gave you the motivation to write a book?
A lot of the driving force of writing the book came from emotions that stirred up inside of me. When I'd hear people say, thank you for your service. Sometimes, at first, it was, okay, what do I say? And then later it became, do they really mean it? And eventually it became, if they really mean it, what are they doing about it? Which motivated me to ask other service members how they felt, what were their feelings, where did it take them, how did they respond to it, and then how can we best help service members and really say thank you for your service?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So you brought up a good point. There's like, thank you for my service. And we've had several conversations about this, but like, I think the average person doesn't, when they see that, they may get offended by the cover. Don't thank me for my service. And then you got to allow me to explain. And so let's get into the explaining part. Like, what does that mean? When you named the book that, what was your thought process behind that?
Well, the don't thank me for my service was to actually do exactly what you just said. To try and generate some type of a response from you as a reader or as a person just reading the cover. When I write this book, it's not to be ungrateful. It's also not to understand that you're saying thank you for my service out of gratitude. It's more out of a question of do you understand what my service was?
Yeah.
And why? It's nice to hear, but what's behind the words?
Yeah.
So that's why the title of the book is Don't Thank Me for My Service, Allow Me to Explain.
Okay.
It's not a slight at anybody. It's a let me explain to you what my service actually represents and what the expectations of the average service member is when you say that.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, as a former service member myself, you know, it can be annoying And I know that people aren't doing it out of spite or anything, but it's like, you have no idea what I did in my service. So what are you thanking me for?
Yeah.
And if you're thanking me for my service, well, how are you standing up for veterans' rights now?
Well, I think one of the things that are really hard for the 99% of the Americans that don't serve is to really understand what service means. You go out and you make the sacrifices, you and your family make sacrifices for the betterment of the 99%, so that we don't have to serve, or we choose not to serve. It's not for everybody. That's the first thing. But for the less than 1% that actually do it, I've had a feeling that they deserve more, and they haven't got it all. It's a bond that we took an oath, but it's a bond that America makes with the service members that just needs a little bit more follow through.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate here for a second. What do you say to those who will say, we've already done enough for veterans? How much more do we have to do for them?
I'll answer that question with a question. What have you done for the veterans?
When I say we as a country, I mean as a country. Because I will counter with this, and I say this all the time. Freedom ain't free.
Never has been and never will be.
Freedom ain't free, and when you don't take care of those who put everything on the line for that freedom that you have, like it can be that's how civilizations crumble. Like that's how superpowers crumble, right? Like people to forget Rome was a superpower.
True.
They stopped taking care of their soldier, their army, and their force, and they crumbled. Like, as a country, I think we have to kind of look at that and be like, okay, because I think America takes freedom for granted, right? Look, truly takes it for granted.
I don't know if America takes it for granted. I think America has I guess taking it for granted is a choice word, but the expectation, I mean, it started all the way back from Vietnam, World War II, and so on and so forth, that service members went out and fought. But at that time, majority of the service members came back and they were treated decently.
Yeah.
But after that, we went into a period where, you know, we weren't in a whole lot of major conflicts, but the past 2 decades, if not a little bit longer, we've been in something, be it everything but a full-out war.
Yeah, I know for the amount of time I was in the military, there was like, I guess like little pockets where we were a garrisoned army,
mm-hmm.
like when I first, but for the last, I don't know, 15 years?
20.
We've been a standing army at war somewhere in the globe, and I think it's crazy. I want to take a pause right here for a second.
No problem.
Because there's going to be some people watching this. It's like, I thought all these dudes talked about was sports. And I want to caveat this episode with, you get to see the full breadth and depth of what Fieldhouse Sports and Entertainment Network really is. Sports was something that came easy for me. And so it was an easy on-ramp for what we do. But it's things like this is why this platform was created, to allow a voice to be heard and for people to be able to talk about whatever that whatever it is. And so if you tuned in and you didn't got mad because I'm talking about something other than sports right now, I'm sorry. But this is what this platform is. And, you know, it's not for everybody sometimes. So, but I wanted to caveat that because people are going to see this and be like, hold up. I thought all they did was sports.
Well, you know, you can take this conversation and you can equate it to sports team. In the military, and thank you for your service, we are a team. We're probably the biggest team in the world. And the only difference is the wins and losses are permanent.
Yes.
And for people to actually understand that is something that, unless you've been in that situation, you don't understand it.
Yeah.
It's easy. I mean, there's conflicts going on right now. And people hear about, oh, they lost this many people and they lost that many people. But it doesn't hit home. It's just a number or a statistic. But for me and you, we've been through that. We've lived that experience, and it hits different. You know, when we hear somebody lost or we experience somebody that's under our control that we lose, and then we come home and we're treated as, okay, you went to combat, so what?
Yeah, and you know, I think me and you've had this conversation before. Matter of fact, we just had the other day. We just had the other day, right? And so let's talk about that, because so I did 12 months in Mosul. I walked the streets of Iraq every day for 12 months straight. Then they put me on a plane and flew me back home. And within 24 hours, I was in a car driving back to see my family.
The crazy thing is, you got to, first of all, for the audience, you got to give them a vision of what Mosul looks like.
So this
what
was,
were you looking yeah, at? This, how you dealt with it?
This was Mosul when, you know, it was fresh off the insurgency. We didn't push the insurgents back. We were a nippet, a transition team with the national police. And so every day we're going around Mosul, keeping the peace. I was there when Iraq did their first elections. Mm-hmm. We were there protecting the polls so people could go and vote. And you had buildings that were crumbled from tank rounds and blown up. You had insurgents every day trying to blow you up with a vehicle-borne improvised explosive device or everything. And so trash on the side of the road could be a bomb.
So your awareness and your
hyper aware, right?
Yeah.
And then they send you back to America and put you on the road. And it took me, this is no joke, probably 2 months to get used to just driving down the road and not seeing a trash can on the side of the road and not be like getting tense about it, right? And so those are all the things that go into this, right? Mm-hmm. And about the thank you for my service piece, it's like, that's a reality. And
how do you cut that off? How do you cut that off and walk into Walmart and just be lackadaisical and normal?
Bro, you can't. Because yeah. Every day for a year, it's life or death for you, right? And then you come back and it's like you got to flip that switch off.
And that goes back to the question you asked me. For a person, and they hear this and they get
some people offended. Don't get offended.
They get offended, but the question goes back to, okay, what have you done for the service member? You're that service member that just came back from deployment. Within 48 hours, you're on the ground and you're walking into Walmart. And at that point, who did what for you? You just got off a plane. You were just battle rattle, fully loaded, ready to go.
Your mind is still in Mosul or wherever you were. Your mind is still deployed. And it takes time, and really it's just time. Like, I'm going to give you a perfect example. Mm-hmm. We're going to peel. I don't think this conversation was supposed to go this way, but it's going this way, y'all. I'm sorry. So I walk my dog every day, twice a day. We go two different routes. And so on this one particular route, it was on the summertime, I got attacked by a bee. Like, this bee stung me in the head. Real talk.
Got your attention, huh?
Got my attention. And so this bee was, like, patrolling this area, dude. So to the point where I would literally walk around this one spot and then get back on, right? So this went on all summer. I think somebody eventually killed the bee. But in my head, I couldn't walk through there for like a month. It took me a month to get up enough courage to say, you know what, let me try this route again. And it's simple things like that people take for, but for a service member, dude, that just takes you right back to that moment.
Yeah.
And I started laughing about it. I was like, dude, the fact I'm so happy that I'm cognizant of the fact of what's going on, to be able to control it in some sense. There's a lot of service member that, dude, they can't turn it off.
Which goes back to, again, what have we done? You know, it's good to say those words. Thank you for your service. But what are you doing? Yeah. How are you thanking me?
I didn't put all my business out there.
Yeah, you know, what you know, you couldn't even come kill the bee for me.
Bro.
You know what? I need you even more now.
But now here's the flip side of that. So I get back home, mm-hmm. and I tell my family what happened. My kids are dying laughing.
Of course.
And on the surface, it is funny. But
they don't understand the traumatic.
Yeah. Dude, that was a moment.
Yeah.
I was like, It took you all the way back to like, okay, what do I got to do not to get stung again? I got to avoid this thing. I can't just like, because the bee came after me a couple of times after that.
The good thing is, so people that haven't served can kind of understand what you're talking about. Everything that you just said isn't negative. There's a whole lot of positive in that. One is your awareness after the fact, but even moving forward, you adjusted and adapted. That's something that, you know, some people would have just not went back there no more.
At all.
And that wasn't an option for you.
No.
This is your route. This is what you do. That's something that I think people that haven't served can learn from. Sometimes we're just focused on what needs to get done. In your mind, the dogs need to be walked. It could be anything. And getting it done is not an option. It's a how do I do it? And that's, you know, that's something that most people can't relate to. They'd be like, oh, that's too hard. I'm not doing it.
I remember as a kid, man, we used to have this gentleman. And he actually taught ROTC at the high school. But he would have moments where he would get triggered and he would be back in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And people used to write this man off as being crazy instead of trying to figure out what the systemic problem was and what was the trigger and what was drawn, so that he could actually now understand for himself what situations might trigger him, and he knows now how to deal with them.
I mean, a lot of what we're talking about right now is kind of combat related. I cover some things like that in the book, but majority of the book is based off of The transition.
Now,
the transition from being in the service to becoming, quote unquote, a civilian again.
Now, who's your target audience for your book?
It's a combination. Primarily, my target audience is the 99% that don't serve.
Yep.
The reason they're my target audience is because they're the people that need to have the understanding of why we feel the way we feel, what our expectations are, what our needs are, how they can best utilize us in the civilian world, because ultimately we are all going to become civilians again.
Yep.
In that our military upbringing or history isn't always or shouldn't be classified as a negative. There's some stigmas that come along with us, but if you understand the person and the situation that they've been through, it's easier to adapt and deal with them, and it's easier for them to be a benefit to your job, company, whatever you may have a service member around, the community itself.
Yes.
So that's what the book is primarily focused for, the 99% that haven't served. And then, of course, you know, it's also a way for people that have served to understand what they're about to go through. Because when you transition from the military to civilian life, it's not today I'm wearing a uniform, tomorrow I'm in civilian clothes and everything is different.
It definitely is not.
It's a whole different world.
Yeah.
And for people to transition and not really have the structure that they're used to, which comes from being in the service, that's no longer there. When the parades end and the medals are going away and the uniforms comes off, some service members are left with silence.
That's real. That's real talk. That is real talk.
So what do they do from that point? You know, the hardest question anybody ever asked me in my whole life was, what do you want to do? I served in the military for 27 years, and nobody ever asked me. I joined the military. I was 15.
Hey, sorry, what you want to do?
No, it's like, hey, what do you want to do?
This is what we're doing.
I'm like, what? What do I want to do? And it was a young lady. And I was like, nobody ever asked me. I sat there dumbfounded as a first sergeant for a long time, just like trying to figure out, what do I want to do?
Yeah.
You know, and you know, that's why some service members go into the aspect of, I don't want to work by myself. I want to, you know, I don't want to own my own business. I don't want to take orders anymore. But it's a different world.
I used to admire the young soldiers who were getting out who knew exactly what they wanted to do. Like, they knew exactly what they wanted to do. And when you've done 18, 20 years and to retire and more, and then you're retiring, that's all you've ever done, right? And so now you're just like, okay, man, I gotta, what do I like to do? Like, I always use myself as an example, man. My undergrad is in accounting. I have my master's in accounting. I have a master's in sports management because one time I thought I was gonna go into the FBI.
Okay.
One time I thought I wanted to be an athletic director. What I'm doing right now was never
on the plate.
Not on the plate at all. And it wasn't until I retired, I got out, started coaching some high school sports, and kind of started doing some things. And I just kind of like, I won't say fell into it, because I did do some stuff media-wise when I was in the Army on the side, but it wasn't something I ever thought about as being a path of career when I got out of the military. But here we are, like, we're going into almost 10 years of this, and it's been a lot of trial and error. But at the same time, it's been fun.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that most service members after their time struggle with is purpose.
Yeah.
You know, what is your purpose? How do I find my purpose again?
And I think that's what, because I think I've told you this before, like, this is probably the longest I've done anything since I've been out of the Army.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I jokingly tell people I'm a serial entrepreneur, but I think a lot of it came back to I couldn't find the purpose in what I was doing. But this platform has given me the purpose because I'm helping student athletes. I'm helping people achieve their dreams and goals. And so that's been the purpose behind it for me, which is probably why I'm still sitting here doing this and hadn't went on to something else.
Which is what we consider in the military service.
Yep.
You know, you're still serving.
Yep. It's kind of like what you always say, just another mission.
It's just another mission. The what happened once you got off the battlefield, you changed uniforms, but the mission, it just changed.
Yeah.
It's just a different mission that still needs to get accomplished. We served in the military. That's why they say thank you for your service. You know, in word in that whole statement is service. So we're trained to serve. In a whole lot of different ways, but we're trained to serve. And so when we get done serving the military, we're looking for another way to serve. Some people find it in media, like you. Not many do that. Some people find it in owning an entertainment center. Some people find it in writing a book. It's just a different way to serve.
I think one of the biggest, I would say, gift and curse that we got from the military was that we became really good at identifying a problem and solving it.
It's crazy that you say that. Those exact words are in the book. Because that's what we're there to do.
Yeah.
You know, we get given a mission.
And that mission is to solve this problem.
That mission is to fix whatever.
Yeah.
And our job is to figure out the best way to fix it without causing the most damage.
Yep.
And that's, you know, yes, that's a blessing and a curse.
That you can never turn off. Once you are ingrained into that, and you actually, you can't turn that off.
Especially if you're in a leadership position.
Yes.
Once you become a leader, you kind of, that's your focus. Your focus is, even if you're not the main leader, your focus still is, how can what I'm doing affect the end result, which is solving this problem? And that's hard for somebody that doesn't have that mindset to even understand. Because in their mind, it's like, it ain't my problem. I ain't got to fix it. And in our mind, it's like, but it's a problem. Yeah. And it needs to be fixed.
It needs to be fixed.
Yeah.
Hence why you have our family media group and FSEN, because student athletes here in El Paso definitely need exposure.
Yeah.
And also bringing light to things like this need to happen, and creating a platform to do that needed to happen.
Which is also a reason that I wrote the book, because we as ex-service members, it doesn't matter what armed forces you serve in, even to include the National Guard or reserves, we all go through this, and we need a platform too.
Yes.
We need an avenue where we can, if nothing else, just talk about what we experience, what our expectations are, what our needs are, which is something that's really hard for any service member to express. The average service member's not going to come up to you and tell you, hey,
I'm not having a good day today.
I'm having a rough day today. Yeah. I'm homeless. I need help. I need counseling. I got a drinking problem. They ain't going to tell you none of that. They're going to tell you, oh, I'm good. I'm good. Because our DNA, I'll say, is to adapt.
My feelings have nothing to do with this mission we got to get done.
I got to get it done.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how I feel about it. This is what I was told to do.
Yep.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So I will say this, right? I don't know. I've never met one service member that won't agree with this. We did what we did to allow the average American the ability to have an opinion and to state that opinion and not have to worry about something happening to them in doing so.
First Amendment, freedom of speech. I gave you the right to be able to speak freely. Regardless of the circumstances and consequences that come from it,
we said this running joke, and it's different through all the different services or branches, right? But mm-hmm. we used to always tell somebody, "How'd you sleep last night? That level of protection I gave you, that was good, huh?
That security,
yeah.
But it's hard for the average civilian, the 99%." To actually understand that.
Because it doesn't impact, like, I'm probably about to get in trouble on this one.
Don't do it. Don't do it. We need the platform. We need it.
All right, I'll keep that to myself. But no, it's when you've never had to sacrifice yourself for the betterment of someone else, it's hard to understand how someone could do that.
That, and it also is hard to understand what, even if that person wasn't the person to sacrifice. We have this saying in the military, you're not part of us until we go through something together. It don't matter what role you played in going through it. Once you go through something with us, now you're one of us. Well, if in the civilian world, they don't have that. The closest thing to it would probably be a gang, which is not, or a fraternity, sorority.
Yeah.
You know, there's organizations that you have to go through something before you're one of them. That doesn't happen for the average. It don't happen for the average American.
Yeah.
So yeah. We don't understand it so much.
And so, I mean, at the end of the day, every service member does what they do. They've all got their reasons behind it, right? Some joined because it was for college money. Some joined, and I'm about to date myself because I was probably the last group where you either went to the Army or went to jail. I had one or two soldiers like that, and this is when the Army was phasing it out. Mm-hmm. But we all had our reasons for joining. But once we were there, our reason for doing what we did was because of the man or the woman in the foxhole beside us, and understanding that even at the lowest level, if I make a mistake, it could result in somebody not being able to go home.
And it's bigger than yourself.
Yeah, and none of us ever wanted to, especially as leaders, ever wanted to have to make that phone call or write that letter to a parent or guardian saying that your son or daughter isn't coming back home. And so I think understanding that aspect of it kind of hopefully brings to light to some of this and makes people start understanding. And I know we've had these conversations about part of the reason for writing the book was to start this conversation.
And that's why the title is what it is, to start a conversation, to start the thought process of, is there more?
Yeah.
Can I contribute to this new mission that they're on?
Yeah.
How can I help? Or if it's hiring a service member, if it's feeding a service member, if it's providing a job for a service member, housing a service member, all these things are things that we go through after we transition. Because while we're in, it's all taken care of. You know, there is no question about, are you going to eat? Where are you going to sleep? All that stuff. That's all taken care of. What you're wearing the next day is all, you know that already. Yeah. But it's different on the other side. And once you cross to the other side, you can't go back.
Yeah.
And that's why 11% of the, which is crazy, 11% of the less than 1% of the nation's population are ex-service members that are homeless.
Yeah.
Which is, again, what have you done? What are you doing?
And I don't think there's one service member that's asking for a handout or asking for someone to sacrifice for them. But I think what it is that, dude, I put my life on the line. At least make sure I'm good.
Make sure I'm good. And in the book, I talk about each service member should have, I mean, there's 300 million people in America.
Yeah.
More, of course, but I'm just using the round number. There's 300 million people in America, and if I say less than 1% of 300 million, we're talking 3,000?
Yeah.
30,000, excuse me. 30,000 service members get out. They should have a job. They should have a place to live. They should have a way to take care of themselves or their family. They should have a way to transition back into society and be productive. But if 11% of them are becoming homeless, there's a problem. And again, as an ex-service member, we're trained to fix problems.
Yeah.
And that's a problem that needs to be fixed.
Hence the book.
Hence the book.
Hence the book to start the conversation. All right. Man, I tell you, we could go on and on with this. I don't think that either one of us expected this to go this way. But it did. And I think it was worthwhile. It was therapeutic for me. Therapeutic to get something out of my chest. Talk about that bee attack. Don't come running up on me out at one of these games going, you might have some problems. No, I'm just joking. You won't trigger me. I won't snap and start low crawling or something. I won't have a PTSD moment. But
before we get away from this, and we get back to the sports things on Friday.
Yeah, exactly.
That's our next project is Fridays. We got two games. I want to give you a copy of the book.
I appreciate that.
From me to you. Give you a chance to read it and.
Now go get yours. Go get yours now.
I know that the backdrop says that it's on ebook, but it's right now out on paperback as well. You can go to Amazon and you can find it.
Or you can go to his website. He's all.
Or you can go to my website, which is mparkerbooks.com, and you can purchase one. Get the e-copy or the paperback book. And hopefully it'll help you understand a little bit more about this conversation we just had.
Yeah.
And what service members go through.
Now, let's just go and put it out there, man.
Okay, you put it out there.
So Mr. Parker has contacted Howard Family Media Group about putting together marketing his book, the book tour and everything. And so this is kind of kicking off the whole book tour and everything else. So if you're a business out there and you'd like to have Mr. Parker come in and talk about the book, or even sitting down and talking about veterans programs, do so. You can contact him from the website, mparkerbooks.com. And, yeah, as we kind of start to do this thing and put it out there, I mean, that's part of it. We will be launching a podcast here in the probably right after the start of the new year.
I'm looking forward to it.
Where Mr. Parker and another individual, we won't release that yet until we solidify everything, we'll kind of sit down and start talking about some of this stuff, veteran services. And he's got a lot of things up his sleeve, y'all, besides just his book. He was just telling me that every chapter in this book can actually be broken down and talked about as well. So that may be the premise of the podcast. We're still working on that. But, no, I mean, it's – dude, I was – when he told me that he was writing a book, I was like, okay. Then he goes, I need you to read it and edit it for me. And I was like, really? Well written. Like I told him, I said, for me to sit down and start reading and not put it down, you've got something special there.
Well, it wasn't written in a form where it's to preach.
Yeah.
It was written in a way for understanding, to start the communication, the dialogue, for other people to first even identify the problem.
Yep.
So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. So don't be mad at me for taking away from sports and having this conversation. This is a conversation that's near and dear to the platform and to my heart, and it's something that had to be talked about. And so if it got a little too serious for you, my apologies, but now you got at least a little better understanding of myself as well in doing this.
He's afraid of bees.
No, just that one particular bee, man. Look, that thing had me doing research on what kind of a bee would attack you like that. I'm looking at Japanese hornets and everything. Oh, wow. Bro, it was crazy because it was a black and red bee. I'd never seen it before. The only thing that it looked like was a Japanese hornet.
Look, you must have saw that bee up really close.
The first time, man, it was like, pow, hit me on my head. The next time I'm walking the dogs and I see it on the wall, right? So I'm like, people are probably like, this joker is going in about this bee. I see it on the wall. And so I'm looking at this bee and I'm like, I'm good. And that joker came at me, man. I had to take off running. It went right past me. I missed my ear. I ducked out of the way. And it chased us up the street a little bit. And so every time after that, we would walk in the middle of the street. So I'm looking at the bee. At the hole. And I had enough distance off where he was like, I wasn't a threat to him. But yeah, no, it was, yeah, I'm like looking at this bee, man, looking for him. I'd be seeing people walking by. I was like, oh, he about to get him one.
Well, this book is not a bee. And it's not here to sting anybody. It's not here to take swipes at anybody. It's here to open a dialogue.
Yeah.
And I hope it does exactly what it's planned to do. And I look forward to a lot of people reading it.
Definitely.
It's already a bestseller, so.
Yeah, man, that's the funny thing. It's like 24 hours of us putting this thing up, man. It was Amazon bestseller in what, six categories?
Yeah, six categories in 24 hours. It's been awesome, but you know, the more people read it, the more people can talk, and maybe we can see more change.
Definitely. Well, hey, we're going to be back on again on tomorrow. I'll be back tomorrow with FSEN Daily talking about sports again for all you out there that's like, this guy's tripping. We'll be back on talking about sports again. Then we'll have Game Time 915 on Friday, and we have two games going on Friday as well. Mr. Parker, thank you for joining us. Folks, this has been FSEN Daily. We're more than just sports. Remember that. We'll catch you guys tomorrow. Have a good one. Be blessed.
Thank you. Oh, no.